So our church is working through the book of Acts for the next 22 weeks. And we have one main point in this entire series. You are called to be witnesses to the ends of the earth, right? And how's that going? Okay. The last thing I want is for this to be like a sermon series that, you know, is maybe remotely interesting, but it doesn't have any bearing on your life. Now, you haven't made even a baby step towards, like, let's say you have like non-Christian colleagues, which is very possible, or like non-Christian friends, right, and family, which, you know, is probably true for many of us. Are you seeking to bear witness that Jesus is, you know, is the Lord, right? And so I hope for that. Now, today we have just one main point I want to consider with you, one main point, and this is it. You grow as a Christian. You mature as a follower of Jesus when you fulfill your calling to be a witness, when you do what the Bible says. But here specifically, when you realize your call to be a witness. Again, I want to say this one more time. You grow, you actually mature when you do what God has called us to do in the book of Acts, which is to be a witness, right? And the reason for that is when you are a witness, you experience power, pain, and pleasure. Those are our three points. Power, pain, and pleasure. But even before we jump into the message, I was thinking about this as I was writing this message. And this question is really for those of you that count yourself believers. Even the main point, like you grow when you actually witness to the ends of the earth. How many of you are interested in growing? I know this sounds so like maybe offensive, but how many of you are honestly just coasting? Do you know like what I mean? Like I recently finished this tiny book, and it's entitled On Preaching Better. And one of the things I talk about in this book is that in my limited observation, I don't think many preachers aspire to grow in their craft, right? And, you know, it can be a variety of reasons, but I don't really detect that in many preachers, like a desire to improve their craft, to grow. But if by analogy, like we had to ask that question, like for you, is basically your spirituality more like almost just duty in the sense that, okay, I go to church, you know, I'm part of a family group, and okay, I participate, but you, if you ever meet someone that wants to grow, they're different. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I want to get better at golf, if I want to cook better, all of a sudden you see initiative. Like, you look at YouTube channels, you're like, oh, okay. And then you practice, and all of a sudden other things get cast aside so that you can actually grow. Something I do every week is I just keep working through the church directory. And, you know, some of you have said, I feel like when you're preaching, you're talking to me. Yes. Okay. But, no, but, you know, I was like looking through the directory, right? And then you might want to try this too. When you, not in a judgmental way, but just in a thoughtful way, how many people do you know, like, when you encounter them, you feel like they actually really want to become more like Jesus? They want to grow. And it could be that you're just exhausted from, I don't know, like life, career, parenting. I don't know. But even that question itself is worth pondering. Have I sort of like reached the point where I'm coasting even, and I'm not even aware I'm coasting. I'm not really concerned about growing. I'm just in and out. But right now I'm really serious about growing my career, growing my wealth, right? It might be that. And so even then, that's a great question to ask. Do you actually want to grow? Okay. So with that, let's look at those three points, the power, the pain, and the pleasure. The first is this, right? Now, the power. This is something that is really worth keeping in mind. I want to begin by asking this question. Why is obedience? I know obedience is such a dirty word, like even among Christians. Why is obedience so important? Why is it so important? And there are a lot of ways to answer this question, but why is obedience to God so important? And I want to suggest that this is why. Obedience doesn't save us, obviously. Jesus' obedience saves us, but our obedience does. But let me give you just one suggestion why obedience is so important. There's this famous line from a hymn, and it goes like this. We can never know, like existentially, the delights of his love until all on the altar we lay. That's very eloquent, and it's basically saying, we're never really going to know God. That is, God isn't going to be real to us, right, until we actually obey. Let me give you a simple example, really simple example. But I hear this example all the time, and I sometimes wonder if there's like a transcendent script that God gives to every person that experiences this. But I hear this multiple times during a year, and it's not even from our church members, just people who profess faith. It goes like this. You know, hey, Pastor Paul, I just decided to tithe this year. So that's always the first one. I decided to tithe this year. And then there's always number two, this qualification, without fail. It always goes like this. And I know God doesn't work tit for tat. It's not like if you do this, then God does. I know that. So there's always that qualification. But then number three, the narrative is always the same. And they're like, but it's really weird. This is the first year I tithe. And for some reason, my sales are doing really well this year, right? Or like, I inherited a random like amount of money. Like, and what they're saying is this. They're like, it's really weird. Like, I'm obeying, and in that context, for the first time, God is becoming real to me. And like, it's powerful. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. But you see, like, that's what they're getting at. And that's why obedience matters, because obedience is the context, and I would argue the only context, right, in which you experience the power of God, right? And this is why, by the way, if you feel like your Christian life is dead, and you're like, oh, like everyone else has all these great stories, I never have any great story to share, it might be because you're not trying to obey God. Where do we see that in this text? So last week, when we read the text, basically the religious authorities told the apostles, stop talking, stop sharing the gospel. And if you don't, then we're going to imprison you, we're going to beat you, and all of the above. And so the apostles are afraid. That's encouraging. But then they pray for courage. And what do? Instead of obeying the rulers, they obey God. And what do you think happens in that context of obeying God? They begin to experience God's power really in amazing ways. I mean, we saw one example after another. Let me just run through them very quickly. There's this character named Ananias, his wife, right? And by the way, we don't have time to talk about this. Just as an aside footnote, it seems like pretending to be generous is a big sin. Okay, we say you should be generous at New City, but pretending to be generous is even worse. But isn't it interesting? Ananias, Sapphira, they sell a plot of land. This is what was duplicitous. When they present the proceeds, they present it as if it was all of it, right? But then Peter knows it isn't. But how? Okay, like how? If like one of you had come and said, hey, Pastor Paul, like I sold a piece of property, I'm going to give it to church. My response would have been like, whoa, that's awesome. I wouldn't have gone to Fairfax County, like tax logs. No, I mean, like, but the question is, how in the world does Peter have access to this information, right? Because the Spirit came and supernaturally revealed it to him. I don't know how, but the Spirit's like, oh, that's not the full amount. Okay, so that's pretty amazing. And then we're told as the story unfolds that they have such amazing healing powers that even his shadow seems to be able to like heal people. Man, like, again, you have to use your imagination. Like, can you imagine Peter walking and then just his shadow has been cast on someone that's been lame and all of a sudden they start walking? Even Peter would have probably thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, you know, like, that's amazing. But then this other miracle, they're in prison and there are guards, meaning there's no way they could have escaped. But in that context, somehow God comes through an angel and liberates them from prison. You have to like not just like skim through this, okay, story. No, like imagine this from Peter's perspective and the apostles, right? Why are they growing? They're growing because they're obeying God. And what's happening as they're obeying God? They're experiencing the power of God. And I think when you experience the power of God, right, that's one of the main times when we grow. And I say this because this is really important. I'm not trying to knowledge versus action. Because when you look at the Bible and it says these are the qualifications of elders, paradigms of the faith, right? Elders are supposed to have knowledge, but they're also supposed to have what? Action, knowledge and deeds. So I'm not saying you have to choose one or the other. But as many of you know, we are like a downloading culture. We download a lot of knowledge. We listen to a lot of sermons. We attend a lot of Bible studies. We read books. But the question is, are you taking any of that knowledge? Are you obeying and therefore experiencing the power of God? Because in this context, please hear me carefully. God doesn't become real to you. Like, he's just mainly in your head until he becomes real to you and when you experience the power of God. I just want to share this. Like, this is a point that's very personal and real to me. Because one of the reasons why, to be honest, I'm so confident about life ministry is because God has shown his power in like hilarious ways in my life. And some of you know this, but when I finished my seminary program, I was thinking about doing a PhD. So there's this one school I applied to, Catholic University in America, right here in DC. But the school did not give me a scholarship. And so I said, there's no way in the world I'm going to study for 5 years to make $0 and go into debt. So I remember saying, God, I don't know. Some people have said I should do a PhD. But if this is something you want me to do, I need a full ride. 2 days later, the director calls me. And he says, Paul, we're going to give you a full ride. And in church history. Now, my PhD was in linguistics. And I said, oh, why in church history? And he's like, are you complaining? I'm like, no, I'll take whatever. But I was like, well, why would you give it? He goes, I don't know. We just felt like it would be good to have like an evangelical or something. I'm like, I'll take it. 3 years later, I decide to apply to business school because just in the back of my head, I was thinking it might be helpful to have some business background, right? And again, I prayed. I said, God, I don't think I'm going to go into business afterwards. And there's no way I'm going to pay over $100,000 for a useless MBA. Right? So I said, if you want me, right, to do an MBA program, I need you to give me a full ride. And this is unheard of. But then this thing called the 2008 financial crisis happened. And all of a sudden, ethics became super popular. And you know what candidate they were looking for? Someone with a religious background. And three schools offered me scholarships. And I'm like cracking up because, and then let me tell you one last story, right? It was about 5 years ago. Our church, I think we were still only like at 80 members. And for like, this is a long story, but for different reasons, I said, I think it would be good for our church to have a building. And those of you who were here from the very beginning, you know we were always like, oh, we're never going to have a building. Never. But I was like, I think it would be really good for us to have a building for the reasons that Boris said, like so that we could do good. But those of you that are familiar with real estate in this area, you're like, not going to happen. Because I looked at our church size. It's like, oh, there's no way we can get a building. But you know why Thanksgiving is always a memorable time for me? Because it was during that Thanksgiving, I went online and I looked for church buildings, right? And then I said, God, if you want us to have a building, you got to somehow make this happen. And here we are. You see, this is why all I'm trying to say to you is that God does become real to you when you actually try to do what the apostles do here, obey. This is why I want to challenge you. This first point is a little longer than the other ones. If you're like, well, I feel like I've been a Christian a long time, I haven't really grown, and I think it's because of the church. Maybe. The general rule of thumb is good. First, always examine your own life. And I want to encourage you, are you doing the very basic things that God has called you to do? Are you trying to be a witness? And in that context, ask yourself if you have experienced the power of God. So that's number one. Last 2 points will be a little bit faster. Number two, it's not just but you experience the power of God, but you also experience what? The pain that comes from following Jesus. The pain that comes. In this context, right, what happens is the apostles are imprisoned again. And then, even after Gamaliel, I think that's how you say his name, gives really sound advice to the religious authorities, just leave him alone. If this work is from God, you can't stop it. The religious authorities hate the apostles so much. Did you notice this detail? They're like, fine, we're going to let you go. We're just going to beat you for fun. And so they beat the apostles. And by the way, beating is bad. They got beat badly, right? And this is what the text is teaching. If you are following Jesus, and hear me on this is so important. Yes, you will experience the power of God. And someday, you will experience resurrection glory. But Jesus, throughout his ministry in the entire New Testament, was really clear about this. If you are going to follow me, right, there will be power, there will be glory, but there will also what? Be pain. Pain is inevitable. Now, here there's so much that could be said, but I just want to make one comment. One comment here, okay? I don't think many Christians understand this point. They do, but they don't. Because, right? And here, okay, like, I want to be gentle here, but I also want to be candid. How many Christians do you know that have basically said this, right? Maybe this is where you are. Maybe you're like, well, you know, for a long time, I actually tried to follow Jesus. I tried to do the right thing, you know. But you know what? After doing this, this, and this, right, you know, it's been really hard. So I don't want to really do it anymore. And by the way, there's this trend. A lot of pastors are leaving ministry during COVID because of this. And believe it or not, I'm very empathetic to this. I'm not a stranger to this feeling of like, oh, like, you know, I'm not a stranger to this. But you have to ask this question. And I want to be very pastoral here, but also very clear. What did you expect? You see, like, it's a really good question to ask. Did you expect that by doing the right thing, you would live happily ever after? Because read the gospel accounts. Jesus always did the right thing. And the way his story ended, at least at some stage, was what? The cross. And I think that this is so important just to meditate on. Because, again, I want to be really sympathetic here. Like, I'm not saying that, hey, you know, like, don't complain. And I think there's a place, like, you should have safe places where you can just get to go with friends and say, like, oh my gosh, sometimes people are terrible. You know, like, you know, whatever. I think there's a place for that, right? But, you know, just ask yourself this. If you are at that place where, like, at some point in your life, you used to, quote unquote, be involved, or maybe you're at that stage where you're just, like, about to throw in the towel because you're like, you know what? I try to do the right thing all for like so many years. You know, I try to host. I try to be generous. I try to, you know, participate. But you know what? Right? It's been really hard. And, you know, if that's you, this is why the text is speaking directly to us. And you notice when you read the Bible never shies from saying, if you're going to follow Jesus, there's going to be a lot of pain. A lot of pain. And I think growing as a Christian, just growing as a person, that's something you have to realize. And you know, the analogy that we have is this. Have you noticed this? Let me ask you a basic question. And by the way, this is, just as a side, one of the arguments why longevity matters. Because longevity allows for long relationships. Let me ask you this question. You know your relationships, right? Your human relationships. which of those relationships are the deepest? Which one of those are the most profound? Are they the ones that, you know, like a lot of people talk about, oh, like the years in college, but, you know, not to diminish college relationships, but those are easy. You know, like you live together, food is, you know, like you do, it's easy. The relationships that are deepest are the ones where you have been through great times together and you've also cried together. And that's the kind of relationship that we are supposed to have with Jesus. It's not just Jesus, I want to experience your power, I want to experience your blessing, I want to experience resurrection glory, but it's also what? I want to experience the pain of sharing in the work of redemption. So I just want to encourage you, you know, if you are like, you want to throw in the towel or you don't want to do the right thing anymore, you do have to ask this question, like, what did you expect? But finally, that leads us to our last point. It says this, like, this is a sign of growth. This is, how do you know the disciples grew, right? This is outrageous. You know, from the previous chapter, they're afraid, but this is what happens. In this chapter, they get beat up, right? They get beat up. And being from New York, I'm very familiar with getting beat up, right? And just as an aside, it's good for every man to get beat up once in his life, okay? But you know what I'm talking about. Occasionally, you meet that man that's never been beat up, and you're like, he should have gotten beat up at some point. But anyway, right? You know what I mean. But let's focus, all right? And so anyway, they get beat up really badly. And what does Luke say? And then they rejoiced. They rejoiced that they would be counted worthy of Christ's suffering. Now, how and when does this happen? Now, I'll keep this point really simple. How and when does this happen? This is the process, right? And we'll close with this. You see, the reason why obedience is so important is because you begin to have some insight, never fully, into what Jesus did for you, into what Jesus did for you. And so right now, like, you know, many of you know this, right? Just from simple experience in life. Now, being a father now, I have some sense, just a little sense of what my parents must have gone through. Like, especially when my kids say ridiculous things, you know, stuff like, have your kids ever said this to you? You've never done anything for me. I'm such a great dad. You know when they say that? I just crack up and then I discipline them. But like, but you know, when I hear nonsense like that, I can't help but think about the nonsense I said to my parents. And then because of that experience, right, of identification, I can't help but love them a little bit more because I get it a little bit more. When you obey the command to be witness, and as a result, you are threatened, you are imprisoned wrongly, and you are beaten, you know what happens? You get a sense, oh, this is what Jesus did for me. He left the glory of heaven. He came to speak the word of the gospel to us. And because of that, he was imprisoned. He wasn't just beaten. He was killed so that you and I might live. You see, and what happens is this. As you experience like your suffering, you're like, oh my gosh, Jesus, this is just a taste of what you went through, because like no other person in history, he bore the full wrath of God so that we might be adopted. And this is why like obedience matters, because until you obey and until you experience power and until you experience even pain, right, Jesus is an idea to you. It's a very inspirational idea. But when you suffer for the sake of Jesus by being a good witness, this is what happens. And by the way, this is when and how you grow. You're like, Jesus, like, I'm suffering, but thank you. This is an honor where, thank you, I can suffer for you. And I can suffer a little bit, right? And you have a sense of what you did for me. So I want to encourage you, dear friends. I want to close in this way, right? You know, this series, please do not be a spectator. Do not be like, okay, witnesses to the ends of the earth, right? But do this. go and be the witness in your sphere of influence. Go just do it. You know, wherever you're working, wherever you're living, do it, right? And in that context, experience the power of God. Experience the pain, but also experience the pleasure of suffering for Jesus because he suffered first for us, okay? Let's pray together, Ismael.